This is Issues and Ideas here on KCBX Central Coast Public Radio. I'm Randall White. And from the moment Central Coast Congresswoman Lois Capps announced her plans to retire at the end of this term, candidates looking to fill her spot began to announce their intentions to run. KCBX invited each registered candidate onto Issues and Ideas in order to share their visions for the 24th Congressional District, which includes all of San Luis Obispo and Santa Barbara counties and a portion of Ventura County. San Luis Obispo's Matt Kokkonen is our final guest. We're happy to have him here. He's running as a Republican and has run for the Central Coast Congressional seat in the past, and is in fact the only candidate running who has run in the general election against Capps. He is currently a business owner, insurance agent, and financial advisor. Matt Kokkonen was born in Helsinki, Finland, and immigrated to America in 1962. He's a graduate of Santa Barbara's Westmont College. Matt Kokkonen joins us today in studio to discuss his vision for serving the 24th District, should he be elected to the seat in November of this year. Welcome to Issues and Ideas.
Well, thank you very much. I very much appreciate being here, Randall.
Now, Matt, you've done this before. You ran for Congress back in 2008. You lost to Lois Capps 32-68%. Why do you feel you have a better chance at winning the Central Coast congressional seat this time around?
Well, the demographics are totally different.
It's true. It's
totally
it.
Different. Back when I ran, the Democrat registration was favored by probably about 30% over the Republicans.
And it was a long, skinny district that hugged the coast.
It was the ribbon of shame, literally. In fact, it was so gerrymandered that most political science classes used our district as the classic example of just outrageous gerrymandering. It went all the way from Monterey County line down to Port Hueneme. It was impossible. You know, the law says that land has to be contiguous. They just couldn't jump from one area to another. And that's true. It was contiguous at times when the tide went out. But it was somebody had to run, first of all, and I wanted to make sure that somebody had the guts and would fight for the Republican and conservative values and the fiscal responsibility and those the things that we hold dear. And I ran, and I got over 80,000 votes. And that was that's more than virtually anybody else had received. So,
among the Republicans running, would you consider yourself the most conservative?
Well, I am a conservative. The others aren't.
And so you consider yourself the only conservative, right?
Yes, very clearly.
You call yourself the legal immigrant on your campaign's website. You want to expand on that?
Well, usually people use the term illegal immigrant. That's a misnomer to begin with, because immigration is a process, the legal process of entering a country in order to become a resident of that country. It's a legal process, and you can't be an illegal immigrant. What we have now is an invasion of illegals, and that's what's happening, and we have to absolutely get a handle on that. And I wanted to make a point about that. I am here legally, and I value America greatly. I appreciate the values and the principles on which we were founded. And I want to make sure that people realize that we can come here legally or illegally. And to do it illegally is wrong. And we have to make sure that people who are here illegally would kindly go back home. And the ones that are here legally, we welcome them.
The process you went through to immigrate into the United States so many years ago, does that same function still exist? Could someone come to the United States the way that you did back then and follow the same steps as easy as it was for you?
Well, my father died when I was 13 years of age, and I told my mother at that time, I said, I want to go to America. And she humored me and took me to the embassy in Helsinki. What's a 13-year-old kid know about anything, she thought. Well, I got the papers, immigration papers, filled them out, sent them in. 3 years later, when I was 16, I got my visa. And I left everybody there in Finland, my family, my friends, and landed in New York with one suitcase at 16 by myself. Didn't know anybody there. And, Randy, I'm here to tell you that now I have two suitcases.
So you've expanded.
Only in America can you do that. So back then, you know, you had to go to the embassy, get the papers, and do it the way I did. And basically the process is still the same. You still have to apply. You have to show that you have to answer the questions and what have you and do it legally. And that's the way it should be done.
You were a local leader in the effort to recall Governor Gray Davis back in 2003, which was successful.
Yes.
And led to Arnold Schwarzenegger as a replacement. Do you still feel that effort was in the best interest of California residents?
Yes, it was. Whether or not I agree with all the steps that Schwarzenegger took, and I don't, it was very good for people to see that the people's voice will be heard, that they have power, that the initiative process works, and that people can make a change, which doesn't have to go through the regular process. I love that about America. We can amend things, we can change things, and we have a process, a legal process to do that without having a revolution.
You wrote an op-ed piece in 2014 urging San Luis Obispo County voters to vote no on Measure L. That's the $275 million Cuesta College bond to upgrade facilities. It passed overwhelmingly, as you know, with nearly 2 out of 3 voters approving it. How would you work in Congress to change the way community colleges are funded, if at all?
Well, let's go back to that particular issue first. The reason I was against that is because the trustees and the people who were in charge of Cuesta College had gotten a lot of money, but they were not using it for the facilities. A lot of that money was spent in other deals. And that's what I find objectionable, and that's what's happening in Congress and in the state legislature. Come up with new taxes and we say it's for this or it's for that. However, a large portion of that just goes towards general funding, and a lot of it goes towards employee benefits and salaries and what have you. Of course, we need people to work, and I don't begrudge that. But Cuesta, which is a college specifically a technical university, a technical college, it prides itself on being a hands-on institution. They were letting their facilities just get dilapidated. And they had gotten a lot of money recently, and that was it was supposed to go towards fixing the facilities, but it wasn't. All of it was put into the general fund. I object to that. Did that answer the question?
Well, what I'm wondering is a lot of candidates are talking about community colleges and the fees for students and free education in some cases. How would you work to make sure that the colleges are properly funded, if not through bond measures like the one that you spoke out against? How would these colleges be funded appropriately in your eyes?
Okay, that bond was supposed to be specifically for infrastructure. Okay, see, there again, you combine the two of them and saying how should be funded if not by these bonds.
And there is an oversight committee, is there not, that makes sure that that bond is spent appropriately?
There is an oversight, but depends on who's on it and how they, if they have the guts to hold their feet to the fire. That's what it boils down to. Whatever source of funding we have for the community colleges now or for regular, for other universities, state universities, it needs a very strong board of trustees who's not beholden to employ unions or other special interests, and we must make sure that that happens. Of course, students will clamor for anything that's free. If we give you something for free, would you turn it down? No, generally we don't turn it down unless we know that there's some nefarious reason why they're doing it. But we all want freebies. And I understand the students are now, and Bernie is saying that, well, I want to make sure that college education is free and we'll basically forgive you your college debt. No. Students are responsible for the debt they undertake. And that's getting in front of the questions you were even asking, because I figured you'd get to it anyway. If people contract, if students, they're not children anymore. They're adults. And they have to make sure that they think clearly about the majors they're engaged in and the basic economy and how much would a social science teacher make versus how much would a physicist make. Those are some hard decisions that students must make. And our universities are equipped to train them appropriately. So if they contract to get a student loan, they need to pay it back. Because it's not fair towards a lot of other mothers, single mothers who put their kids through school. They've mortgaged their houses and whatever else just to get their children educated. They value that. And so if somebody comes by and said, well, just forgive me my debt, that's not fair and it's not right.
To your point on the facilities, clearly community colleges would need appropriate facilities to educate these students. How would you go about funding the facilities if not through a bond measure?
I was the chairman of I attend a local Grace Church, a local church here. I was in charge of their building fund when we started modernizing, upgrading our facilities. And I said there was a great discussion as to should we go out and borrow money, should we mortgage our facilities to do that. I said, no, we pay as we build. We build as we pay. And we did it without going out and mortgaging. It took us a little longer, but I thought it was the right thing to do. There's no reason for us to always mortgage our future or mortgage the future of our children to pay for these facilities. Now, it doesn't mean that mortgages aren't appropriate and right, but I want to start with the point that let's pay cash. We start at that principle. And then if we have to, then I don't have a problem in getting mortgages or getting bond issues.
Where would that
at the
cash come from? Student fees?
That and other sources of financing, public financing.
You are certainly an outspoken critic of the Affordable Care Act, or Obamacare as it's colloquially known, which we'll get to in the moment. Your statement at the debate that the U.S. has the best medical care in the world, and this goes back to the debate that I was the moderator for back in February, received the most vocal disagreement from the audience that night. Why do you believe that to be the case, and how would you work to amend, remove, or replace Obamacare as a member of the U.S. Congress?
Yeah. My comment was not in relation to that our current health insurance is the best in the world. My comment is that our facilities, our doctors and our hospitals and our medical personnel are the best in the world. I believe that. It doesn't mean that there aren't other countries that don't have good medical facilities.
Were you surprised by the reaction from the audience when you said that?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Because I think they were booing the fact that I was criticizing Obamacare, which I wasn't. That was not what I was doing. My daughter is an emergency room doctor. She has extremely good skills. I know a lot of doctors. I have many doctor clients through the years. I've got them. I've compared medical procedures of how people are treated in other countries to that how we compare how we treat them here in the States. We take care of people from even the preborn. We operate on them. We do everything possible to alleviate pain and suffering, and we help people who are at the other end of the game also. No other country does that much care as we do. People from Canada come here. My brother came here and happened to have a heart attack while he was here on business. And he had travel insurance, and the jet flew down from Toronto to pick him up. But they were on the tarmac in Texas where he was for 3 days because there was no hospital bed for him in Toronto. Now, Toronto is not a hick town. It's 3 million people. They have a lot of big facilities there. He could not get a hospital bed to be treated. So he had a second heart attack, which fortunately they took care of extremely well, very, very well in the United States.
So he was treated in Texas.
He was treated, yes. Mm-hmm. And people from Canada come here. Now, on the other hand, because of our quality of care is fairly expensive, a lot of people from here go to other countries to get treatment. But our doctors, I'll stack them up against doctors from any country, of any place in the world, and they are top-notch, absolutely top-notch. And our hospitals they excel. They're good.
So for the sake of argument, we'll say that the U.S. has the top-notch doctors, but is there equitable access to those doctors? And does that matter to you whether
absolutely
it is or
does.
Not?
Mm-hmm. And what we have done is we have mixed two things. We have mixed doctor care, medical care with insurance. That's a totally different concept. Everybody has access. All you have to do is go make an appointment. If you're in a socialized medicine country, you have to wait for a long, long time to get treated or to have MRIs, to have things that are really critical in many cases. You might be waiting for 6 months for a certain type of operation. We don't have to do that here. So we have access. We have absolutely good access. Even without insurance, we have access. So now all of a sudden, the insurance industry, in which I've had a lot of dealings for the last 40 years in my career, 45 years, in fact, now all of a sudden, they've taken over the medical care. No, they're just one cog in it. They're one way for people who are smart enough to buy insurance against a catastrophic loss. Now, all of a sudden, they're the people consider them to be the medical providers. No, they're not. That should be a free choice of everybody. Am I willing to pay for the medical care myself? Or am I smart enough to insure myself against a catastrophic loss, like your house burns up or you have a major catastrophe in some other manner? That's what the purpose of insurance is, to replace the financial loss and to make sure that you have the ability to weather a storm. But now people talk about insurance, insurance, insurance. No. The issue is, do we have medical care? What do you want? Do you want insurance or do you want medical care? It's an atrocity. It's an albatross. It's an extremely expensive thing around our necks. We have to get rid of it. And I've worked with that on that side for decades. I have ways to make sure that we don't lose benefits at the same time while we make a change. But Obamacare has to go. Absolutely has to go.
Well, Matt Kokkonen, Republican running for the 24th Congressional District, thank you so much for being here on Issues and Ideas.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity very much, and thank you all the audience for listening.
And this is Issues and Ideas here on KCBX Central Coast Public Radio. I'm Randall White.